another occasion, this is just a selection, a fragment from one of his poems, Catullus said this about his friend Lesbia. Lesbia says she'd rather marry me than anyone, though Jupiter himself came asking, or so she says. But what a woman tells her lover in desire should be written out on air and running water. One suspects Lesbia might have had her own views about all of that, but anyway, that's Catullus on Lesbia. Now, let's remember that this is the kind of poetry that was popular among, that was known by, these very same Romans who built that government and built that empire. And that those same Romans went and laughed at Plautus's plays. Maybe not Cato, but probably a lot of them did. Now, in many ways, the greatest, the most prolific, the most profound, the most synthetic of the Republican writers was Marcus Tullius Cicero, Cicero as we called him. Born in 106 BC, died in 43. He was an influential public figure in his own day. He's been widely read and admired ever since. He is another one whose writings very well known to the founding fathers of the United States. His best-known writings are his forensic speeches, of which a considerable number survive. He took cases, sometimes as the prosecutor, more often as the defense counsel, in a number of very prominent, very politically charged trials at Rome. Indeed, this was how really he got his first sort of entree into public life. First of all, we may say about these forensic speeches, they evince a mastery of the rhetorical arts second to none. You have, Cicero is just a master of the spoken word. Cicero upheld standards of absolute integrity in the conduct of public life. Remember, Cato was his ideal. It was Cicero who wrote the book on the old age of Cato the Younger, of Cato the Elder, the purpose of which was being to hold that up as a model to others. His political writings, he wrote on the Republic, on the laws, and on duties, took the harvest of Greek political thought and added to them some very interesting and important elements of the world in which he himself lived. For example, Stoic concepts of natural law, that there are certain things that are inevitably and unchangeably written into the universe, and that our task is to learn those things, to discern those things, and to put ourselves into right order with them. This, in the end, will make happiness. So what Cicero tried to do was blend traditional Roman ethics. Remember when we talked about the Stoics in the Hellenistic world, we said that they often borrowed metaphors from the stage. Play your role, know your role, accept your place. What could be more Roman than that? The Romans were Stoics before there was Stoicism. So Cicero was able to take traditional Roman ethics, blend them with Stoic ethics, and fold this into an enveloping context of of natural law, that there are rules that apply always and everywhere to everyone. Now, this led him, for instance, in his book on duties, to formulate a moral principle that has been a challenge ever since. It's one that is almost impossible for anyone to disagree with in principle, and almost impossible for anyone to live by in practice. He says advantage can never conflict with right. For everything that is morally right is advantageous. And there can be no advantage in anything that is not morally right. Think about that for a moment. Anything that is advantageous is morally right. I can't lie, I can't cheat, I can't steal, I can't fiddle my taxes, I can't pull a fast one on anybody, I can't do something when nobody's looking because I know I can get away with it, because this can never be right and it can never really be advantageous. That's the point. It may profit you, of course it might profit you, but it could never be finally advantageous. As I said, it's one of those kinds of things. You think about those words of Cicero and you say, do you know anyone? Do you know anyone at all who would say, oh, no, I disagree with that. That's terrible. And then start with yourself and then think about everybody you know. Do you know anybody who lives always by that rule? Could Cicero have lived by that rule? I don't know. But it's a very interesting notion and very Roman, very sturdy, that Cicero. Now, I think we can sum up this picture of Roman political life, Roman cultural life, Roman social life, by thinking about Rome's greatest hero, Aeneas, the central figure of Rome's great epic poem, the Aeneid. Now, we'll come back a couple of lectures down the road, when we talk about the culture of the early Roman Empire, the empire under emperors, we'll talk about Virgil, and we'll talk about his poem, and we'll consider the arts of the poem.